Hello and welcome to today's meditation session. Thank you. So, just the usual announcements, first of all. For those who are coming to the Introduction to Meditation class, series of four sessions, this month being run by Dennis, that will be held in the room to my right. And over here we're doing the ongoing meditation, where people who have meditated before can actually take the meditation a little bit deeper. And when I was last week over in Indonesia, I was mentioning a lovely little technique for meditation. It doesn't change what you've been doing already, but it just makes it a little bit more deeper. And also, it makes it very simple. And that is applying a little story which I wrote, first of all, in the Opening the Door of Your Heart book about the Emperor's Three Questions. I quote it very often. And that Emperor's Three Questions I've been using for meditation teachings as well. Those of you who don't know, now the most important time, the most important thing to do is to care, and the most important thing is the person right in front of you. And in meditation, the thing right in front of you is whatever meditation object is right in front of your mind in this moment, right now. That is really important. Sister, you have to come up to the top here. This is Sangha. So please, up here. Yes, come on, out of respect for the place. That's much better. Very good. You deserve. Very good. And so, the thing right in front of you, whatever your meditation object is the most important. For example, that you have like sleepiness, you're dozy. People's mistake in meditation is they don't think that is important. They try to get rid of it. They try to overcome it. They try and discard it. And that is what causes the sleepiness to last. You're wasting energy. You're not being mindful. You're trying to get rid of something and go somewhere else. And it's not letting go. Or you may have like a thought in your mind. And you try and get rid of the thoughts. You don't give them importance because you think that something else is more important. Which means you're doing something, trying to get rid of something. And that is why the thoughts go on and on and on and on. You may later on in the meditation, you may say, be seeing the breath. And you want another deeper object, such as these beautiful lights which appear in the mind. And then your breath is not the most important object. It's something in the future. It destroys your meditation. So if you are aware of whatever's happening right now, whatever it is, and give that importance, it means you're not only mindful of it, you're aware of it, but the awareness deepens because it's essential, it's vital, it's important for you. Things which aren't important for you, things which you try and get rid of, it diminishes the amount of mindfulness you give on it. You're not really paying attention to it because you're trying to get rid of it. Which is why we don't understand it. A good example is with thinking, which is one of the biggest obstacles to people. They can spend years and years and years, you know, worrying about why when I meditate I'm always thinking, I can't get rid of my thoughts, because you haven't really got to know your thoughts yet. You don't exactly know what they are, because you're always trying to get rid of them. So, if it's right in front of you, right now, give it importance. And once you really give it importance, your mindfulness stays with it. And what should you be doing with it? Developing it? Holding it still? No, you're supposed to care for it. And caring for it, this beautiful thing like you have like a glass, you care for it, make sure you don't damage it. You look after it, care for it, give it the kindness as well. The warmth, when you care for something, that thing usually stays with you. You care for a cat, cats are great, you feed it once and they always come back to you. We've got a cat at our monastery and many people care for it. which means why the cat gets very fat. It has many breakfasts a day. It always pretends once it's being fed that the next monk who comes along, oh, they forgot to feed me. It's lying. But it just wants some more food. You know what cats are like. If you care for them, they hang around you. It's the same with mindfulness. If you care for what you're watching, then you don't have any distractions. You don't have any restlessness. You become still with the object you're on right now. So the meditation becomes quite easy. When people ask, how should I meditate? What should I watch? Whatever's in front of your mind right now, that's what you watch. But then what should I do? Just care for it. Is that all? Yes. Because what happens, you know, if you follow those instructions, you're sleeping. So you're aware of the sleepiness. It's important. You don't try and get rid of it. Because you're not reacting to it, your mind sort of recharges. It's not wasting energy. It recharges and recharges and recharges until the sleepiness vanishes by itself. Sleepiness, dullness is low energy. And you can't overcome low energy by wasting energy. You have to conserve it, keep it until it builds up naturally. If you have thinking going on, if you're always trying to run away from thinking, you don't get to know it, what's actually happening there, you don't understand it, which means the thinking keeps going on. So if there's a thought there, give that whole thing importance and care for it. See what happens. Even get to know it. And after a while, you know, when you really get to know what thinking is, you will come to the great insight. It's a complete waste of time. And just that insight by itself, that knowing, is enough to dispel it. They have this constant recurring theme in Buddhism, especially in meditation. This personification of stupidity, control, called Mara. And this Mara was the being who was supposed to try and stop the Buddha becoming enlightened. Trying to distract him, interfere him, tempt him, whatever. And always does the same with meditators. And the solution to overcoming this personification of all hindrances, Mara, is not to beat Mara up. Not to smash him in the mush. That's why that mush is in English, in the face. It's not to fight. All it is I know you, Mara. I know you, thinking. And just to know that thinking, that's enough for the thinking to subside and disappear. But if you try to get rid of it, or you get so inside of the thinking, so involved in it, you can't really see it. You're just like enmeshed in it, like being lost in a forest, in a jungle. And you can't see one tree from another, you're too deep inside of it. Of course you can't know it, but when the thinking first starts, if you just care, it's important, get to know it, and after a while, it vanishes, just like sleepiness. And then later on, you may be watching something like the breathing, which we always focus on at one part of the meditation, because it happens naturally. A person sometimes, when they've really been meditating a while, they can watch the breath go in, watch the breath go out, but I can't let go any further. You know, Ajahn Brahm talks about these nimittas and these jhanas, the bliss better than sex. Yeah, well, I'm into that. But, you know, I haven't got that yet. I haven't got any bliss at all. I'm bored stiff. So what do you do? If you just got the breath going on right now, even if it's not so delightful, it's happening now, it's right in front of you, give it importance. And care for it, as it is right now. Because if you're still with this meditation object which is happening right now, if you just don't disturb it by trying to get rid of it and move on to something else, the very stillness transforms the meditation object. Because you are still, your mindfulness increases and increases and increases. The cause for increasing the power of mindfulness is nothing else than stillness. The less you do, the more powerful your mindfulness becomes. And when your mindfulness becomes really powerful, you can really see that breath so clearly. But also, the more aware you are, the more your mindfulness increases, the more happy you are. When I woke up this morning, oh, I overslept because I've lost a lot of sleep in my travels in Indonesia. A couple of nights, hardly sleeping at all, and working all day, getting up at 5, going to bed at midnight. Really sort of hard work. So when I woke up this morning, I was very grumpy. Why? Because I have really low energy. Really tired. And you know that it's very hard to be happy when you're very low energy. But when you start getting your mindfulness coming up, be still, energy starts coming back, you can see more, you can be more clear. When the mindfulness increases, so does your happiness. So when you're actually mindful of something like the breath, don't try and get rid of it. It's the most important thing in the whole world. Stay with it. And then your awareness increases, you see more of the breath, and also you become happier. The delightful breath happens that way. And you're still with the delightful breath, you're not doing anything, not going anywhere. If this is what's in front of you right now, the delightful breath is the most important. You're not looking at nimittas and jhanas, enlightenment, psychic powers, whatever happens next. You're just focused on what's happening right now. This is important right now. The only thing you ever have is the most important, whatever's right in front of you. You're just caring for it. And of course, the bliss gets so strong that after a while you can't see the breath anymore. You see the incredible, beautiful lights. And if you're seeing beautiful lights, like somebody said last night, they got to a stage and their lights look like a movie. That is actually a stage in the meditation, which I know really well in those early days. Yeah, you actually lost, you know, the feelings of the body. And the mind is making up scenarios. Now, like a movie, it's usually not very exciting, but so quite delightful. If that happens, if that's happening right now, you're seeing a movie in your head, it's the most important thing in the world for you, because it's right in front of your mind. Care for it. And soon it settles down. Usually afterwards, that's when brilliant nimittas come up, wonderful lights. And wonderful lights come up. Oh, what should I do now, Ajahn Brahm? See this beautiful light in my mind. I want to get into this jhana or that jhana. No. Forget about anything in the future. If that light is in front of you, it's the most important thing in the whole world. Given importance, nothing else matters. Be kind to it. And then it develops. So, sometimes it's weird. We think to get somewhere, you have to do something. But in meditation, if you want to get somewhere, you have to do nothing. Just to regard this moment as the most important. Just to care. Now the only time you have. So simple, but so powerful. That's all you need to do. I don't know why people keep coming back to learn. It's all the instructions you will ever need. Simple. Okay, let's try it. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. So anyway, for those of you who have come in late, if you have come to the introduction to meditation class, that is being held in the room to my right. Because people sometimes come in late. Here we're going to do a 45-minute meditation, so it's going to go on for a while. And if you never meditated before, this is torture. It's the sort of thing which they did in Guantanamo Bay. Sort of prolonged stress positions. And we haven't got enough money to be sued. So if you haven't meditated for 10 or 15 minutes before, then please go next door. Otherwise, you're going to be in great pain. Okay, so I'm going to just lead the meditation in a normal way for the first few minutes, and then it's going to leave you up to you. So close your eyes. With your eyes closed, make sure you can feel your body. And adjust it to get into the most comfortable position. And please never look at the books and believe that this is the best posture for you because someone said it aligns all the energies and connects you with the earth. That's a lot of bullshit. You feel your best posture. You feel it. Right now. If you're sitting on a chair, do you need to lean your back forward or get away from the chair or lean it back? What is the most comfortable for you? Find out. Do you need to wiggle your bottom to get a more comfortable position? Do you need to raise your feet by putting a cushion under your feet? Or raise your bum by putting a cushion under your bum? We have the same size chair, but you've got different size bodies. So adjust. If you're on the floor, make sure the cushion of the sofa, if you're sitting on a sofa, is just the right place. And if you need to scratch, scratch. Cough, cough. Don't try and control your body. Instead, be kind. But once you think that your body is comfortable, now is the time to go deeper into a relaxed body. When I was in Indonesia, I did a little debate. It wasn't much of a debate, we agreed on too much, with a Chan master. In the lineage of the Dharma Drum, Master Sheng Yen. And when he said that in his tradition, the Chan tradition, all you ever do is just relax. I said, yeah, that's what we do as well. So see if you can relax the body a little bit more. To be able to do that, zoom in on the most irritating part of your body right now. It may be your tummy if it's sick. Maybe your bowels if you've got IBS. It could be your legs if you've got an ache or an injury. Or for me, my nose is just really itchy and wants to sneeze. Whatever it is, zoom in on that one irritating part of your body. If you've got many irritating parts, zoom in on the most irritating part. Which is what I mean by being mindful of it. Give it importance. It's the most important thing for you right now. This irritation, do not try to get rid of it. Give it importance and care for it. At the very least, you get to know it. When you run away from things, you don't really understand them. Get to know it, care for it, and your awareness will be able to give you feedback, like I say every week, gives you feedback, so you know whether that irritation is getting worse or getting better. If that's what you're focusing on, you will soon learn. It's learning. You learn how to ease irritations in the body. As long as you're mindful, seeing the feedback, you learn the response from your mind which makes it easy, relaxed, soothing, calming. For me, that attitude of mind is kindness, letting it be. Just being warm to the irritations in my own body. And I really keep my zoomed in focus on that irritation until I really relax it, ease it, calm it, soften it, till it's almost gone. So for me, I'm focusing just on my nose, calming down this itch, which is a precursor of a sneeze. It's the only thing in the world for me right now, really important. Now, being kind. I know you, Myra. And the irritation is getting less and less and less. Once you relax one part of the body, zoom in on another irritating part. So you really need to look after this body and relax it really deeply. You can feel everything opening up. No tension, no squashing. What you're doing is taking the pressure off, the strain off your body. And I can feel parts of my body which were squashed opening up, parts which were extended, loosening both ends. I feel really physically relaxed. It's such a pleasant feeling. Once the body is really relaxed. So when I turn over to the mind, how peaceful is my mind? If there's still thoughts going on, that means I need to just relax my mind. And I'm mindful of just how peaceful or how agitated I am. And I learn from the feedback given by mindfulness how to make my mind more and more peaceful, less agitated. Something you just need to get used to. What is peace of mind? What is agitation? It's opposite. And learn what you need to do to move the mind to more and more peace. One of those things which leads to more and more peace is what I mentioned at the beginning. Whatever you are aware of right now, whatever it is right now, now is the most important time, is your meditation object. It is the most important thing in the world for you. Regard it as important and care. See what happens. So I'm now going to be quiet. It is getting close to the end of the meditation now. How was it? And how is it? How do you feel right now? What worked? What didn't? I will now ring the gong 3 times. At the end of the 3rd ringing of the gong, you may open your eyes to end the meditation. Okay, so see if there's some questions. From Sri Lanka and from Turkey, and from USA. Dear Ajahn Brahm, here we go again. In the context of meditation, what exactly is right effort? Generally, effort implies the use of some force or will. However, you advise not to run after things and just wait in a moment. Thank you. It is this the problem with the translations from the Pali into English. The Buddha never spoke English. He spoke in this language as dialect of Sanskrit. And the word is like Vayama. Or if you have actually ever look at this explanation, the 4 types of right, I'm not going to even call it effort, because that sort of makes a person a bit confused, is the effort to restrain, to say no to things, to abandon, to let them go if they've already come up there. The effort to see what's necessary for beautiful objects to appear in the mind, and what's necessary to keep them. And what actually effort creates those 4 results? And you find like striving, using force or will, creates the opposite. Yes, you can maybe hold an object for a while, but you get very tense. And a person who uses will or effort that way can get so far in meditation, but no further. And you find they get to be control freaks and very unpleasant people to live with. So, when you get to right effort, basically what you do, you have to go back, this is in Sri Lanka, go back a little bit to the 2nd factor of the Eightfold Path, where the motivation, where the effort is coming from. Where the effort is coming from, the motivation is to renounce, abandon, let go of everything, including your will. Renounce things. And be kind. Be gentle. There's the sorts of things which the English word force or will implies. No kindness, no gentleness at all. It's why we call the military, the armed forces. And this is totally the opposite of what Buddhism was suggesting. So unfortunately that translation can be very confusing. Especially what from that wrong translation, the next factor of the Eightfold Path, Sama Samadhi, what people, you've heard me say this before, they call it right concentration, which is a disgusting, terrible, very misleading word. It's right stillness, not concentration. Because it's true, concentration is what you do with effort. And concentration means that meditation retreats become concentration camps, in both senses of the word. So instead of concentration, we use stillness. And instead of effort, it's the right letting go. So, if you want to get deep meditation, that's what you need to do. Or rather, what you need to not do. People for years and years have been trying to get their mind to be still. You might use all the effort in the world, and you'll never find an escape from all that thinking. And this is a very old simile. I even did this in Indonesia a couple of days ago, so please, those who've seen it before, please excuse me. How could I keep a glass of water really still? All the effort, the will, the concentration in the world will never keep this water perfectly still. There's only way, only one way, to keep this water perfectly still, and that is no effort, no will, no controlling. Put it down, let it go. And it becomes still all by itself. So letting go causes stillness. Use force or will, be still. How many times do I have to tell you, water, be still? It never gets still that way. Next question from Turkey. How to be silent and not respond without being unkind? You can respond with body language, just with a smile. And just a little smile is sometimes all the kindness people need. So you don't need to respond to people with words, because usually words are very difficult things, and quite often we say the wrong words. I often mean to say one thing and say another, or I say a word and I intend it to carry one meaning and people misunderstand me and it says another meaning. So words can be very, almost have a life of their own. When they're in your brain and you think about them, they sound great. But somehow or other, when they go through your mouth and into somebody else's ears and gets processed, it means completely opposite of what you intended. That's why words are just very dangerous things. You think you control those words, that you have them in your power, but sometimes, you know, the words take off and cause you all sorts of trouble. So, you don't really control your speech. Sometimes it causes you too much problems. So instead of responding with speech, silence can be such a powerful tool. And by not speaking, but by acting, body language being kind, even just the way you hold your body. There's sometimes unkind people, they could ask an actor, you know, if you're trying to portray anger, you've got to hold your body in a certain way. If you're going to portray like kindness, softness, you hold the body in another way. You know, it's the body language stuff. So if you can even portray kindness with silence, it can be incredibly powerful. But it's really hard for people to remain silent. And we always speak far, far, far too much. And it's not necessary. You don't need to speak to express your kindness, your love, and your affection for someone. Just a little smile. Some of the most loving gifts is the gift of silence. And lastly, from the United States, USA. I did some meditation before I went to sleep. I woke up with eyes closed, seeing a super bright light. Brilliant. I was scared. Oh. It went away after a while. I wonder what that was. I have never seen it while doing meditation. Only I saw it a few times during sleep after meditation. Yeah, that's a typical limiter, a super bright light. And the reason why in the United States it happened when you went to sleep or just after you just had a tiny sleep or you tried to get to sleep and then it just appeared, was that when you were sleeping you weren't trying to meditate. You were letting go. You did the meditation and then eventually you got out of the way and let the meditation happen when you were going to sleep and nimitta came. It happens very often, because when people are meditating, they're trying so much, they're using force, they're using willpower, trying to be still, and they can't get there. And then, okay, so we go to bed, we lay down. Number one, it's one of the most comfortable postures you can possibly have, laying down on a nice soft bed. So you don't have to worry about aches and pains, or, you know, stiffness, which you do when you're doing sitting meditation. And number two, you're not trying to do anything. It's one time in the life that most people know how to let go. Not everybody. Sometimes people carry their problems into bed with them. For many of us, we know how to let go in sleep. So that should be a good lesson for you from the United States. When you try to meditate, you can't. But when you let go of trying, let go of the will, let go of the force, which you did when you just lay down your body on your pillow, then things happened. And next time you see that super bright light, please don't be scared. Yeah, it's powerful because you can't control it. It's not yours. It's not subject to your will. That's why it's scary. It's out of control. Whoopee. So, it doesn't come from your will. It comes from when your will starts to vanish. That's why it's very scary, because I can't do anything. It's also in that particular place, it's like you're vanishing. That, you know, you don't exist. Because a lot of times we measure ourselves by our will. It's big will, strong will, people have big egos. When the will vanishes, the ego vanishes with it. And that can be scary for people. But, next time don't be scared. Just enjoy it, see what happens next. It's always very, very, very brilliant. So, I only saw a few times during sleep after meditation, yeah, exactly. Next time see if you can just let go when you're meditating and see if it happens then. I was saying to people, I think on Thursday night in Denpasar, that on some of the retreats which I give at Jhana Grove, that people fall asleep when they're meditating. And then when they go to bed after a full day's meditation, they can't go to sleep. They're awake all night. And I said, well, it's a problem. That's a problem. The solution is so easy. When you're in the meditation hall, try to fall asleep. Then you won't be able to. And when you're in bed at night, try to meditate and you'll fall asleep. Problem solved. You understand why? Because what we're trying to do, we actually stop it happening. When we let go, things happen nicely. Okay, any questions from the floor today? Yeah?
It's a question of, say, like, who we are. We say we let go.
Mm.
We say, look, we bring our mind still. And I think that would say, you talk about, like, we are the passenger and looking for the bus driver and the deep meditation, eventually find that there's nothing, there's no one there. So who actually are we? Who actually makes the decision? Say, look, I let go, I want to relax. But is that emptiness the same?
No, exactly. That's a very good question, and the answer is very scary, because it's not you. The only reason you can meditate like this is because I brainwash you to do so. Someone asked me, God, because we're having this discussion with a Mahayana Chan teacher, from a very famous lineage, Dhammadram, and I was asked about the concept of like transmission in Theravada Buddhism, because that's such a strong thing in Mahayana and also Tibetan, the transmission from teacher to student. So do you have that in Theravada? You bet we have. I've just been giving transmission to everyone here. It's not in some formal ceremony. It's just by the words, by the teachings, by the example. This new ideas, not even ideas, much deeper than an idea, a different way of approaching something is actually put into your brain. Brainwashing, conditioning, if you want to call it that, but it really works. Because why do I teach like this? It is because my teacher, Ajahn Chah, taught like this. But did he invent it? No, that came from his teacher. We came from his teacher. So there is a transmission which goes on all the way back to the Buddha Gautama. And where did he get that transmission from? If you look at the Gatikara Sutra, you find that Gautama Buddha, the person signified by the image behind me, was a monk under the previous Buddha, under Kassapa. So he got it from Kassapa. So they all go back, endlessly. It's just from master to disciple. That's the only way. you can let go, because you can't let go of yourself. It's like a little metaphor which was from Oliver Twist, Charles Dickens, where this man, if Oliver Twist had gave him a pound note to pay off his bills, or £5 note, I think, and his friend said, "Oh, no, he's a real scallywag, this Oliver. You know, I bet he won't come back. If he comes back, I promise I'll eat my own head." And the idea of eating your own head, you know, you can say the words, but when you start thinking about it, it's an impossible thing to do. You can't eat your own head. The same way that you can't let go of yourself. Impossible. Which is why you need the input from outside. And that's what I've been doing. That's why we need a teacher. You've been taught. Now you find letting go happens. And sometimes I ask that question, who did that letting go? And I was mindful and clear enough, it was Ajahn Chah, my teacher. He did it for me. Conditioning, yeah, conditioning. Your conditioning has to come from outside. The power to go through, in Pali, the words of the matter, the transmission. Yeah, after a while it just happens. And sometimes you say, who did that? I didn't do it. I wasn't there. It wasn't me. And you know who did it? My teacher did it. Occurred in my mindfulness, my awareness. And then, so who did it for Ajahn Chah? His teacher. Goes all the way back. So anyway, a nice question. Obviously you probably don't understand a word of my answer, but one day you will. Unfortunately, you've got no choice now. You've been transmitted upon. Yeah, we always think it's me doing all this stuff. I take no responsibility for my teachings. It's a wonderful freedom. You don't have to feel proud or upset. It's not my job. No one in here. Any other questions before we finish off? Okay, let's finish off now. And then we can... I can't stay very long for this evening. There is a big event off in Langley Park for the Mahayana group, the Fo Kwang Shan. So I'll be leaving about 4:30, 4:35. Doing the Kalyanamitta group tonight.